Hey, it's the Deer Wizard, host of North American Deer Talk. I want to tell you about a great new advertising and research platform that we've developed for you, CWDbreeding.com. You know, as the deer industry continues to mature and develop around chronic wasting disease and its known genetic heritability, resources like CWDbreeding.com become essential tools for deer managers across the country making decisions about their herds. I really wanted a platform that excelled at hosting GBV and codon markers in a filterable and searchable manner.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of North American Deer Talk. This is episode 103. We have Doc Gary in the virtual studio. Doc, how are you today?
I'm really good, Josh. I'm happy to be here.
I appreciate you coming on. I look forward to our conversation. Before we get going, I have a little bit of housekeeping. If you're watching on YouTube, thank you so much. Make sure you hit that like and subscribe button. If you are not a YouTube fan, head over to Rumble. We do it over there as well. If you're listening on the podcast, thank you so much. We do it at Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Google, any place that you can find a podcast. We are there. Make sure you leave us a five-star review. We are actively working on reaching more folks and getting the message out. Gary, I want to jump right in because I'm really excited about what we're going to talk about today. We're just chatting offline, and this is my kind of first intro into some of the technologies that are coming on the diagnostic side of things for chronic wasting disease. We talk all the time about CWD because it is the most important part of the regulatory space that we have to deal with as deer farmers. And there's kind of two things that we've identified it as an industry. One is diagnostics and the other is genetic work. So I'm looking forward. I've had Dr. Seabury on talking about genomics multiple times. I'm really excited to get into some of the technologies in the diagnostic department. So I look forward to this. Why don't you just give a quick rundown of your background, who you are, and we'll dig in then.
Sure. Happy to do that. So Dr. Gary Pozzettieri, I was an emergency medicine physician for about 7 years, and I did general practice up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, northern Wisconsin for another 28 years, retired about 2.5 years ago. About 10 or 12 years ago, I got introduced to a couple of scientists that would eventually become my business partners, a couple of extremely bright guys that were working with something called gene expression. And we can talk about that a little bit more in a minute, but they've been involved with the science of, you know, molecular biology for 30, 35 years. These guys have been around for a really long time. So they're there since the beginning, really, of this particular science and have become amongst the best on the planet with that particular science. When I first got introduced to them, Josh, it was really interesting because my brother said, "Hey, you got to, you know, come down here and see what these guys are doing." And when he told me, I said, "Well, that's just not real. You know, that's if they could do that, you know, we would change the planet." So I came down, looked at what they were doing, and they were doing a lot of studies with tissue in humans and also in other species, pigs, fish, bovine. And had a number of studies of things for me to look at. And I was really taken aback and decided that we would start a business. And we started that business, like I said, about 10 or 12 years ago, doing human disease. And the process of doing that, it's kind of an interesting story because, you know, I saw the level of accuracy that they were getting doing the studies that they were doing. And we started talking about the fact that, boy, could you do this in blood? And because, you know, blood has white blood cells in it. These white blood cells are traveling throughout the body all the time and constantly responding to whatever stress that particular body is going through. And so we did some initial testing and lo and behold, found out that they were able to do this in blood, which is really a game changer for diagnostics. It really is very, very unique. So I started doing this with them, I started deer hunting when I was, got my first bow when I was 12 years old, the old Bear Grizzly recurve, and Absolutely passionate bow hunter, whitetails, love whitetails. They're a remarkable animal. I don't know. They just there's something very special about that animal. I know I'm singing to the choir here because you guys obviously I learned rapidly what passion you guys have for that particular animal. Nevertheless, did that. I actually had to give it up for about 10 years when I went through my med school and training and all of that. So I was really happy to get back at it. Flash forward about 20 years ago, I was in a position where I was, God blessed me with an opportunity to buy some property over in the, at the time, number one trophy producing county on the planet, Buffalo County in Western Wisconsin. And I tell you, the smile has never left my face. About, oh, let me see. A year ago in January, I've been over there for a long time. Lots of neighbors, friends, everybody. It's such a hunting community over there. A lot of the economy is based on whitetail hunting, a lot of outfitters, et cetera. In January of last year, so of 23, I got a call from one of my friends that's an outfitter. He said, "Oh my God, Doc, they found CWD over here, and the DNR is going to have a town hall meeting. Can you come over? Because everybody's worried about what their solution might be." No sooner did I hang up the phone, Josh, and I got a call back from another friend that's an outfitter. Same story. And then I started getting calls from neighbors. "Oh my God, Doc, you got it. Can you come over? Can you come over?" Well, I wasn't able to get over there that night. It was literally, several hours later that they had this town meeting, but I listened online and the solution scared me and everybody else. And at that time, fortunately, it never came to fruition, but at the time they had talked about, having unlimited permits with a season from beginning of September through February, weapon of choice. And boy, I went to bed that night after numerous phone calls from the same people saying, "Well, if that happens, it will destroy the herd, property values, et cetera, et cetera." So I went to bed that night, really, to be honest with you, very upset. And lo and behold, Josh, about 2:30 in the morning, I woke up and sat up in bed and said, "Oh my gosh." And my wife's like, "Is this it? Is this the big one here?" And I'm like, No. We can make a diagnostic in live deer." She's like, "What are you talking about?" I said, "We can make a diagnostic so they don't have to kill the deer. We can make the diagnosis. If the deer doesn't have chronic wasting disease, you'll let it go. If it does, they can euthanize it." She's like, "That's nice. Let's talk about that in the morning." So I immediately started calling my business partners, the two scientists. And about 4:30 in the morning, one of them answered. They're like, "Who died?"
Sure.
And so I explained the situation. I said, "Mike, we can do this, can't we?" And he said, "Geez, Gary, that should be a slam dunk." And that's kind of how this started. I went over and met with a bunch of hunters and called my brother, another passionate whitetail hunter. And we started talking about the fact that who would this really, who could this help most on the front end? And somebody said, "Boy, you should talk to a couple of the deer farmers because, boy, oh boy, I think if they have a deer that gets diagnosed, they get put in quarantine. And I think they kill the whole herd." And I was like, "Oh my goodness." Well, needless to say, I ended up getting an opportunity to talk to a number of deer hunters and explained what I felt that we were capable of doing. And Josh, every single person said the same thing. "Geez, Doc, if you could really do that, that would be a dream come true. That would be a dream come true." And thus the name Dream Genomics. That's how I ended up naming this company. Josh Tanute, a deer farmer down in Illinois, mentioned to me that I should talk to a guy named Sean Schaefer. And he put me in touch with Sean, who, as you well know, is the executive director of NDEFA. Man, you want to talk about a guy that is on the ball, knowledgeable, and kind of, to be honest with you, he kind of amazes me every time I talk to him, the depth of knowledge that he has for the science. I was really like, wow, this guy is something else. I talked to Sean and he said, Doc, I gotta tell you, we've heard it all before. We've heard it all before. It all sounds too good to be true. And I said, well, can I do a little presentation for you? So I did it, and he said, well, it certainly sounds good. It's different. I'd like for you to talk to a couple of the scientists. So he had me do some presentations for Tracy over in Colorado, and to Justin Greenlee at USDA and in Ames, and they both were like, wow, that, it certainly sounds like it has potential. We'll be cautiously optimistic here. What we found out was that everybody felt, from the scientists to the attorneys to, even Sean and some of the people on the human side, the feeling was, you need to separate these two businesses. You need to have a business that's just dedicated to animal studies and the other business just dedicated to humans. So, I'm kind of rambling here. Do you have any questions up till now? I'm sorry, I'm going
No,
on. I get
I
pretty passionate about this
I
because
love it.
I'm excited about it.
I have a couple comments. So, in 2005, I made my way to Iron Mountain, which you mentioned the UP in northern Wisconsin.
Yes.
So that's the only place I know up there, and it's a long ride from my house. So that was one comment. It's so interesting. You mentioned Josh and his introduction to Sean, and he's a client of ours, and I've got a chance to know him, and he's a incredibly nice gentleman. And your comments about Sean are spot on. He has so much experience in not only the regulatory space, but he's forced to understand the science because of his position. And you also mentioned passion, and there's just no doubt that every deer farmer I know just has this very kind of deep-seated passion for cervids, whitetail deer, elk, mule deer, et cetera. And it all stems from hunting. Maybe it's something primal in our nature, but we all love deer, and to have folks like yourself that put those pieces together at 2:30 in the morning, and I can certainly understand your wife's reaction, because when I start going on rants about deer, my wife just like glazes over, and I'm like, "You got all that, right?" Like, because it's part of me, right? So, it's really encouraging to have someone like yourself and your partners on board. So let's dive into what this is and kind of work through
Sure.
that a little more methodically, if you will.
Sure.
So what is Dream Genomics as a company? What do you guys do?
So, Dream Genomics is a subsidiary of a parent company called Paradise Genomics that does the human disease. And so we've been working with human disease for quite some time. So in order to understand what we do, you need to understand that there's a difference between DNA and RNA. DNA is static. DNA is the same in every one of our cells. It makes us who we are. It makes the species, each species, who it is. And then individually, it makes Josh and Gary Gary. It's why they use it for forensics, because it's so exact. It's so darn exact. RNA is, so and D, let's back up just for a second. So DNA is part of what we call a genome. All of the genes that make up what a specific species is. So for example, in humans, they did the human genome study and found that there's somewhere around tw between 24 and 25,000 genes in the human genome. And I know Dr. Seabury and others have done some studies, and they've basically discovered the deer genome. And because of that, we can do our studies. So RNA is the response that a body has to whether it's a housekeeping gene, something that is constantly happening in the background, or whether it's secondary to a stress. We walk out into the cold, or more severely, we get a disease. And when we get a disease, the body has a specific reaction to that specific disease. What my partners discovered was that of the 24,000 genes in a human, or however many genes it is, I don't know the exact number in a deer genome, what will happen is if we take a diseased animal and look at its whole genome, and we look at a deer or a human that is does not have that disease, and we compare the two, of all of those genes, somewhere between 50 and 200 genes will be differentially expressed that are very, very specific. It's like a fingerprint for that disease.
Explain so now, differential expression, please.
So differential expression means that at any point in time, gene A may be producing more proteins and gene C may be producing a few more, or it may actually be producing less. So they're differentially, the expression of those genes is different compared to the normal. Now, how the heck do we do that? Well, it's pretty fascinating. You take a plate, the old 1-inch by 3-inch plate that you probably everybody dealt with in biology class. And what they've done is they have printed on that slide, on that particular slide, that 1-inch by 3-inch slide, all of those 24,000 genes in humans, all of those, and actually now they use more than that. We don't need to go into that now, but it makes it more exact. And the same thing with a deer. All of those are on there. Now, you take blood and you spin it down. You remove all of the blood cells. You remove the nucleic acids. So nucleic acids are the DNA and the RNA. You siphon off, you filter off the DNA, and now you're left with a little test tube that just has RNA from that animal at that exact moment that you drew the blood. Okay, so whatever was happening in that animal at exactly that moment is what you'll have in that little tiny test tube. Now, by a pretty remarkable process, they add... I'm trying to think of the best way to explain this. So you remember that DNA is double-stranded, and there's a pair. RNA is single-stranded. So if we add little oligos, those the other pair to that, and attach a little flashlight to that, believe it or not, it will seek out its corresponding pair. Mm. Now we remove the original, put it on that plate, and by a fairly miraculous process, it finds the gene that it's supposed to be attached to. Okay. If there are more genes with flashlights attached, it will be brighter. If there are less genes that are attached, it will be less bright. And we can quantify that. You can actually see it if you looked at the plates, but there's a machine that we put it through that actually gives us a number, very, very specific numbers. So when we compare those two, it is exact. So we can see which genes have been, we'll call it upregulated, and which genes have been downregulated, which is remarkable. And then you do that, you repeat that with numerous diseased animals. And you look for those genes that are specifically involved with that test. Now, why is this different from genetic testing? Genetic testing is usually looking for a gene. It's looking for a single gene. And the problem has always been, even with in human disease, is that people have been looking for that secret bullet, that one gene that's going to cause a problem. They found a few, but for the most part, of all of the billions and billions of dollars that have been spent on that research, they can't find those, that one specific gene. Like I said, there's a few. There's something in females called a BRCA gene that will indicate that a woman has a much higher possibility of getting breast cancer. So there are a few, but not many. Whereas with gene expression, we're looking at the entire genome. So in one deer, there may be 60 of those, and another deer, there may be 120, but you're going to cross-reference and match and find out which of those genes are going to be the same in all of those deer that have a positive, that turned out to be positive for that disease. Are you still with me? Because I'm with you. I hope that I'm explaining in a way that's understandable, because it is to see it is truly remarkable. Now, what I will tell you is that on the front end, when we're doing discovery, the process for us is we do discovery. We look for that 50 to 100 or 200 genes. And for us, we need somewhere between 20 and 30 animals to do that. So we need 20 to 30 positives. We do the discovery, we find those genes, and we say, okay, we think we've got the fingerprint. Now, let's get a whole nother set. Let's get a whole nother set of animals from someplace else that are diseased, and let's test ourselves. Let's test to see if that, in fact, is the right group. Lo and behold, if we do that and we find the right group, we may pare down a few more genes, but by God, we're going to find the right group. Now we put that on a friendly platform called a PCR plate. And now we have removed the very, very intensive, scientific, expensive process and put it into a simple platform that makes it much more chronologically and financially friendly to be able to run that test.
So we heard the technicalities of the difference between DNA and RNA, and the technology itself, and how you guys go about kind of assembling this. Let's slide over into real world, right? I'm a deer farmer, so I'm gonna ask just real basic questions, right? Absolutely. So, and I understand all this is in process, right? This is new. We're working on this, so we'll say that on the onset. So I give you a call. Hey, Doc Gary, I want to send you some what? What do I send you for the test itself, or what could I send you?
So a deer farmer contacts us and says, "Hey, you guys, I have deer that is positive for CWD. Now let's talk about where right now, and then we'll talk about what will happen later."
Sure, I understand. I don't want to dig into the regulatory side of things quite yet.
So, yep. But for right now, for the discovery, you have a positive deer. So Josh calls me up and goes, "Doc, here, I got a positive deer." I say, "Okay, Josh, before you euthanize that deer, please, I'm going to send you specific test tube." Okay, this test tube is what they call a vacutainer. There's a vacuum in the tube, and inside that tube is a substance that will preserve the RNA in the blood. Otherwise, RNA is a protein, it breaks down rapidly, and if you put it in a regular tube, it doesn't do us any good because it won't be there anymore. We send you that tube. You put the deer through a pinch or dart it or whatever it is that you guys do, and the vet draws the blood into that test tube, only 2 cc's.
Okay.
Rotate that tube a little bit, mix it up, stick it in your freezer, and then if you have one deer or 5 deer, whatever it is, we'll send you a little packet, styrofoam packet with ice packs. You'll put that ice pack and you put it in the mail and send it back to us. Okay. We'll get that and we'll either put it right in the freezer until we have enough tests that we're going to isolate the RNA, remove the RNA from those, and then do the process.
Mm-hmm.
Or my partner Scott will just isolate the RNA out of it right away.
Okay. So we have a blood test. It requires 2 cc's. Everybody's familiar with doing the TB blood test. It's just a specialized container with some liquid preservative in there, if you will, to preserve that RNA. Okay. So that's easy, right? We can do that. We get that over to you. You're either going to freeze it and bank it, wait for enough samples to run the tech. So you run the technology, which you described previously. Then there's some sort of results that are that you guys see. What does that look like? Basically, like, and it doesn't have to be specific and technical. Is it like a yes, there was expression in the genes related to CWD, it was exposed, or it has a prion, or is it like a non-detect, like there's no expression? What is that on your end?
So that's a great question, and that's really where the kind of the rubber meets the road. And so what we're doing is I'm going to try to explain this without a picture, because a picture would be worth a thousand words here. So we take something called a heat map. Okay, so a heat map is an individual animal, and then let's say that there's 100, because that's an easy number to work with. 100 genes that are specific to CWD. Okay. And then we will look at how bright or dim each one of those 100 genes are in that individual animal in a specific order. Now we'll take another animal and we'll match it up next to that one, and next to that one, and next to that one, and next to that one. And then we'll put all of the deer that we know are negative, the same 100 genes, and we're looking. And lo and behold, Josh, it becomes really obvious. It looks like a flag where you can see a line down the middle that these animals are positive, these animals are negative. Okay. And it can be quite impressive to see the difference between those two sets of animals. Now, what you will do is you take those positive genes and you're going to move, you say, okay, now let's, like I said, we test. Now we move that onto the plate that is much more friendly. Can we pare that down? Are there, can we, instead of 100 genes, can we get it down to 50 genes that still gives us that incredible accuracy? Because ultimately that's what it's about, right? The USDA is going to want this to be extremely accurate test before they approve it. And you want it to be an extremely accurate test. In the process of doing that, the more of these that we do, what we'll start to do is start to look at deer moving backwards from the clinically really ill, sick deer to the deer that are less sick, and then you don't see it. And we'll be able to actually stage that 1, 2, 3, 4, or whatever stages we decide are going to be the most appropriate. So we want to go beyond just yes, the deer has CWD, or no, it doesn't, because we want to create a tool for more research, for people to be able to say, for USDA to be able to say, okay, if these deer are stage one and stage two, what does that mean? How long does it take? It'd be really interesting to do a study, with like Doc Seabury's deer, where these deer are, resistant. Do they are is there is it just a way longer period of time from the time they're infectious till you might actually see something? There's so many different opportunities with this as a tool beyond just the diagnostic.
Sure, and just what you're saying about the staging process kind of sparks some things in my mind. Just having a very light understanding of the genetic side of things and what we're embracing as an industry. There may be, I suspect that it's possible that animals and hopefully with this test we'll be able to see it, right? Where we have maybe it's six stages, right? I'm just throwing a number out there.
Right,
Okay.
right.
We got six stages, and here's the things that we're seeing clinically in the field. Here's the things we're seeing on the diagnostic side that you're providing with this technology. And you have animals that are expressing through this RNA process or through this RNA diagnostics that never expand past a stage three for whatever reason, right? And
Right.
being able to quantify that, right, through a relatively basic and expensive test, that's magic, right? Like it empowers us with so much information. And the things that can come of that from a management standpoint are really invaluable, not only to producers like myself that raise whitetail deer privately, but also probably to wildlife agencies and conservation groups. Do you want to just touch on what that may look like for them and maybe some of the potential implementations of the technology outside of the farmed industry?
Absolutely. I'd be happy to do that. And the other thing I just want to touch on is, so stage one for us is to create this blood test.
Sure.
Stage two is to create a deer side test where you will have a kit a hunter shoots an animal or an animal is darted or an animal is found by a roadside, and you can take a blood sample, swipe it on, and do a test similar to what a COVID test would be, get an answer as to whether or not that deer is positive or negative for CWD. So a lot of implications there for hunters, you know, with regard to, you know, safety of the meat and et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, I guess if you wanted as a wildlife group, if you could get, you know, there's millions and millions of hunters, you know, if a half a million hunters turn in the results of their test, you would get a pretty good idea of the percentage of deer that in the entire population, because I think the media certainly has sensationalized chronic wasting disease and, you know, nicknamed it the zombie deer disease and sure, have everybody more frightened, which is not making your lives any easier, I'm sure.
No.
But with even with the blood test, you know, to let's say that they discover deer in an area and the DNR would like to know what percentage of those deer may have chronic wasting disease. Instead of killing 100 animals and, you know, looking at their obex under a microscope and making a diagnostic, to be able to dart those deer, draw their blood, and I'm sure this would be a bit of a challenge, but to keep them penned for 24 hours, ear tagged, till you get the diagnosis back, and find out if any of those deer are positive. If they are, you know, they could be euthanized. Otherwise, the other deer get to romp free. So if there's one out of 100 that's positive, that's 99 more wild deer that are out there living life and for everybody to be able to appreciate and enjoy.
It's when I think of the kind of the, call it 20, I know CWD has been prevalent in the West, but it's been the past 20, 25 years that it's really been kind of forced into the public mainstream. And in the past 10 to 15, it's relentless, right? Like there are no conservation or wildlife agencies that are not seriously discussing, looking at, managing, proposing things related around CWD. And that's all across the country, right? We got 33 states now that have identified CWD in the US. So it's a national issue. And for whatever reason, these are my opinions, for whatever reason, we have seen this, in my opinion, fear-mongering tactic of really pushing this kind of place where, hey, there's a, we know it doesn't cross the species barrier, but we're not sure, even though it's never happened. And people have been eating CWD positive deer for 50 years. Let's be clear. We know that if we saw CJD on the rise, we could say something. It's just, it hasn't happened. Now I'm not saying it can't, right? I'm not saying it can't. But that whole story and buildup has put us in a position where, you know, a guy wants to take his kid out hunting. He goes out, he brings a deer home that he harvested. His wife just read the USA Today zombie deer disease garbage headline. And she's like, you're not bringing that deer in this house. And you're certainly not feeding it to our kids. And that guy, whatever he chooses to do, He's probably not going to take his kids hunting again, right? He doesn't want to fight with his wife. Maybe he goes out, but like he's just not going to do it. And that we already have a challenge with hunter recruitment, right? So
No
you know,
doubt.
we're down in the past 20 years, we're down almost 250,000 deer hunters in Pennsylvania alone, right?
Wow.
And that's a big number, right? And we have a big state and like it's got a rich hunting heritage, but like if we want to be able to preserve that, we have to figure out ways to look at this disease rationally and manage it. Do I want to eat a sick deer with CWD? No, I do not. If I had a carcasside test and I was in a known CWD area, you bet I'd use it, right? Like that's a no-brainer. Oh, some blood on a, you know, a piece of paper in a tube, shake it up, it turns blue, positive, or turns red, it's not, right? There's no one I've talked to that doesn't think that that's a good idea. And I know there's a push. This sounds like something that has the potential to do that. So that's very exciting. I know that you did a presentation at the North American Deer and Elk Farmers Conference here in Springfield, Illinois. I think that was last month. I'm going to just for everyone listening, I'm going to link that presentation down in the show notes. You can watch Gary run through his slides. He does a really nice job kind of working through the technology, the test, and showing you where it's at. What did we miss today that you want to put out for folks?
Well, first of all, thank you for that. And if folks do watch it, Josh, what I would recommend, don't watch it on. In all honesty, what happened was at that, we hadn't recorded it. A new deer farmer came up to me at the conference and said, "Doc, I have goosebumps listening to what you guys talked about. This is so exciting. We're brand new at this, and we're hearing about all of this. And this just really gives us hope. Are you interested?" My wife happened to record the entire presentation, and I was like, "Oh my goodness, that's awesome." What I would ask folks to do is don't watch it on your phone because you're a little bit far away from the slides. Watch it on a little bit bigger screen so you can actually see the slides because it will help. There's some heat maps on there, and I kind of go through that again, and you'll be able to see that. The other thing that I would say to folks is, we're new, we're working at this, we're absolutely passionate about wanting to make this happen. What we need help with is we need positive samples. So if you have positive samples, you can go to our website, DREAMGX, DREAMGX. If you wouldn't mind linking that on the
Can do.
in there as well, I would appreciate that. You can scroll down and there's a way to contact me specifically. Let us know. We'll get those tubes to you and we can collect the blood. We're also in a, looking for funding. We're very fortunate that NDFA and the Cervid Livestock Foundation has given us some seed money and some of the principals were at the conference came up to me afterwards and said, "Geez, Doc, this we'd like to help you some more here." So anybody that's interested in investing or donating, financially, we need a little gas in the engine to push this forward. But we really have a very strong belief that we will be able to make this happen.
Yeah, that's great to hear. And I know I was down in Washington, D.C. last week for the NDFA fly-in. And one of the initiatives we were working on is we got the Chronic Wasting Disease Research and Management Act passed. And it was authorized at $70 million. It has not been funded yet. We're trying to get that kind of off the ground. And there's been a lot of discussion within our industry relating to that particular bill. That bill allows folks like Dream Genomics to apply for dollars and secure funding for research. Currently, through our cooperative agreement funding, which the folks that are listening to, they understand how that works. Those are not dollars that Gary can go after. So it's important that we keep pushing on all these different leverage points and funding these initiatives that provide us tons and tons of value long term. So we'll keep working on that on our end. And I appreciate you coming on today and just chatting with me about this. I have a much better understanding of what the technology is. And I think as this rattles around in my brain for the foreseeable future, we'll come up with kind of innovative ways to implement the technology into not only the farmed industry, but also in the wildlife space, because it has implications in both. And I become more confident by the day that the CWE issue will be solved, you know, by various different strategies, one of them being diagnostics. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you so much for having me on, Josh. I sure appreciate the opportunity. It's a pleasure talking with you. And just if I can real quick here, you know, I spoke at the conference a little bit about, I had not had a lot of exposure to deer farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to the Wisconsin, Whitetails of Wisconsin was my first, my kind of intro. And I listened to one of the vets, Anthony
Klinger.
Yeah, great guy. Listened to him speak, and he was talking about how they, you know, you guys, the passion that people have for this, that, you know, when you have a fawn that's sick, they'll bring it in the house, you'll bring it in bed. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is absolutely amazing. We have to make this work. So, you know, I appreciate where you guys are at. We have a passion for this. I have great confidence in my in Scott Magnuson and Mike Falduto, the two scientists that are doing this, and we will push forward. And hopefully, you know, within the next 6 months or something, we can get together again and say, hey, look what we got here.
Yeah, you have an open invitation to come back on and provide us updates as things progress. And we're always excited to hear about these new technologies and how they can really help our operations prosper like we believe they can. So thank you.
Thanks again, Josh.
Ladies and gentlemen, as always, stay tuned for another episode of North American Deer Talk.